Avalon Center's podcast, Responding with Hope, is paid for by the Department of Social Services. Avalon Center offers emergency shelter, individual and group counseling, and much more to survivors of domestic and sexual assault. If you need help, call our 24-hour hotline at 833-537-0970 or visit us at avaloncenter.org.
Hey guys, Leslie Jingleski here with Avalon Center, and we are doing our new podcast with Responding with Hope. And today I'm really excited to have Chief Sean Dunn with the Chief of Police with Williamsburg. And we're going to talk about lap calls. Welcome.
Hey, well, thanks, Leslie. I sure appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate you as always. And you know, I told you that before the podcast today, how much we appreciate you. And so today we're going to talk about lap calls.
Great.
Which is an interesting topic, and I'm excited to finally have somebody that can talk to us about it. Let's start off and tell me, what is a lap call?
Well, a lap call is a lap actually stands for Lethality Assessment Program, and it's a collaborative effort between the Office of the Attorney General, the Virginia Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Action Alliance, and the Virginia Department of Criminal Justice Services. It also includes the Commonwealth Attorney and in our case, the victim witness, as well as Avalon. You guys, you're fantastic partners in this. In fact, this would not be possible without your partnership. So LAP is based on the Maryland model and specifically Dr. Jacqueline Campbell's research. The program uses three evidence-based components that increases both the level of accountability for perpetrators and, most importantly, I think the safety for victims of domestic violence. So this is a unique collaboration which is developed between community law enforcement and the local domestic violence program. All first responders and domestic violence specialists are trained to use a consistent protocol with every domestic violence call. The program can also be expanded to other groups of first responders, such as healthcare professionals. But again, I just really want to stress that this would not be possible for our community were it not for Avalon. So really, we are grateful. Very much appreciate you guys being that strong partner for us.
Well, that goes both ways, because we can't do our job without you guys. And we appreciate you so much. And I think, you know, just talking about that, we are fortunate to be an agency that has such a fantastic relationship with our local police.
Well, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, really, we thank the Lord to you guys, and you just do such awesome work for our community. So really, it's nice having you guys here. And it's nice the support that Avalon receives from our local community. I mean, it's just fantastic. And so,
right. They are such good. They're so good to us. We were talking about that this morning, that this community, this Williamsburg community, rallies like no other community.
They sure
they,
do.
They stand behind something. And so we are absolutely fortunate to have such good partnerships with you guys in the community.
Yeah. It's a great situation that serves our community very, very well.
Yeah. So back to the LAP program, why did they decide to implement the program, do you think?
Well, you know, I think what we found, you know, over many years is that sometimes, you know, the traditional response, police officers responding to a situation, you know, recognizing that, by the way, this isn't all domestic calls, but this is specifically geared for intimate partner domestic type, you know, violence calls. Mm-hmm. And so in those situations, what we found is that, you know, a lot of times, I mean, there are just so many factors behind, you know, the situation. And oftentimes there's, you know, years of escalating abuse, emotional abuse, and all kinds of other things that maybe have finally presented in a violent situation, or maybe it's been going on for some time. And so what we found is that the traditional response, asking the traditional questions, And then eliciting, well, if there is a perpetrator, they're charged, you know, maybe taken to jail, and then maybe we do some things to kind of create a safer situation for our victim. Sometimes that traditional response, if you will, allowed, I think, some things to kind of fall through the cracks. And in some instances where maybe we needed what I like to think of as kind of a safety net to be there, there really wasn't a formal process in place to create that safety net. But with the lethality assessment, we now have a very easy, for law enforcement, a very easy segue into that safety net, and so I suspect we'll jump into it a little bit further in the interview. But You know, we go through a series of questions in those intimate partner domestic violence situations where, you know, we're asking the types of things. And first of all, anything that we ask about as far as the lethality assessment protocol, it's confidential. And the other person that's involved, no one else is going to have this information. It stays confidential. It's not part of the bond hearing or the trial or anything like that. This is merely so that we can ensure that we are getting whatever services might be, and in particular, if services are quickly needed, whatever services need to be brought to the table at that moment so that that victim can now have some sort of a safety plan. You know, so that's the whole goal. That's the outcome that we're looking for. And so
I think that confidentiality is so important to a survivor.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. And so, you know, we afford the confidentiality, and we do feel like that they're much more likely to talk. But we also think that this evidence-based program mm-hmm. has generated the types of questions that need to be asked to ensure that folks are screening in when they need to be screened in, or, you know, it maybe can be more of a traditional response when they're not screened in. And so it really is an effective tool for us to ensure that we're more times than not really getting it right.
And I feel like with an officer, you guys have so much training in so many different things. I mean, obviously you're responding to other things besides domestic violence. I feel like that would take a little pressure off of the officer to know, am I making the right call? Because it's evidence-based. And that anybody who knows me knows that I'm an evidence person. I want evidence-based. Right. And this has been so helpful as far as our end goes.
Well, that's great. Yeah, and we feel like it's a tool that allows, I mean, you know, what we don't want is a situation where every time we go to a domestic, we're having to call you guys, right? I mean, you know, you wouldn't be able to do so many of the core functions that you need to be spending that time on. And so this really gives us a tool so that we can be much more selective and much more appropriate when we get to this point, and then when they get screened in or not. And then we feel like really, you know, as a community, it gives us a chance to really put that best foot forward so that we can do our very best at serving this community.
Yes, and you guys definitely do. So thus far, when we're talking about the LAP and how, you know, since before it was implemented and now, what kind of benefits do you see so far?
Well, I mean, I tell you, it's it really is. We've conducted quite a number of LAP screenings where the app indicated that our survivor, you know, our victim, was in significant danger, and we were able to immediately, you know, quickly, I mean, really at that moment, connect the survivor with the needed resources, and then from that, you know, your team, the Avalon team, really has done great work at not just taking care of that immediate need, but taking care of that need in the immediate need that quick safety plan, but also in the days to follow. To do our very best to ensure that we've got that person stabilized so that hopefully they won't find themselves back in the same very dangerous situation. So I think it's been incredible.
You know, it's amazing because we talk about this a lot at Avalon in meeting the survivor where they are. You know, we walk in her or his shoes. And it is hard to understand what they're going through in that moment. And giving them the empowerment to make their own decisions. And that's where those days following are so crucial. And I think that's where Avalon does a good job of stepping in and saying, look, we're not making these decisions for you. You've had somebody making decisions for you for, you know, however long you've been in this relationship. We're not going to do that to you. And I think your officers are the same way. This is not a power thing. We are just making sure that you understand what we have and what's available to you, like you said. Sure. So that's super.
And in spite of the hundreds or maybe thousands of domestics that our officers have responded to, you know, really, you have to understand we're seeing it from a smaller perspective. We don't understand maybe the psychology behind that victim as well as you guys do. I mean, that's your specialty. And so I think that the really neat thing about this relationship is that we do go and we do our kind of a traditional response, and we make sure that the scene at that very moment is safe. But not having the expertise that you guys have with the victimology, now we again in those instances where it's needed, we're immediately connecting the two so that you guys can ensure whatever services need moving forward, they can be implemented on the timeline that they need to be. So it's a fantastic situation.
It really is. It works. You know, you've got the police department and you've got Avalon, and then you have the victim.
Right.
And so I feel like it just joins those three. It's been such a great thing for us.
And we're so lucky to have a Commonwealth attorney and a victim witness and these other right. support services, if you will, that just wrap their arms around this so nicely. And really, it gives us a chance to really do our very best at serving those that need us most.
Right. I agree. What would you want the survivors to know about LAP? If you were talking to a survivor and who didn't know what LAP was, what do you want them to know and understand?
Well, you know, I mean, first and foremost, that it's confidential, that we're going to be asking some things that, you know, maybe they're uncomfortable having the spouse or the boyfriend or the intimate partner, them knowing, or their kids knowing, or their parents knowing, or anybody else knowing, the media knowing, right? So we most important survivors need to understand that this is confidential, that this is for the purpose of this one goal is to determine if we need to screen them in and get them those, you know, immediate services, or if it's something that maybe doesn't quite rise to that level. I think it's also really important that they know that it's voluntary. I mean, we're always going to encourage survivors of this intimate partner domestic abuse, you know, to take what available resources are there, right? And allow us to at least go through this screening exercise with them. But they don't have to do it. I mean, it's not mandatory. It's not required. It isn't something they have to do. It's something that is entirely voluntary. And for the most part, I mean, there are very few instances where somebody doesn't want to participate, but it does happen from time to time. And so we certainly respect their desires, their wishes, and we're not going to force it on anybody, but we do think it's a fantastic tool. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was also going to say, I think, you know, I'm sure this goes without saying, but I want our survivors and victims to know that survivor safety is our top priority. I mean, to us, there is nothing more important than ensuring that when we leave, they're going to be okay. I mean, you know, we don't want a situation where we've responded, we've taken some action, maybe we've even arrested the person that maybe committed some sort of crime on the victim. And then, you know, 4 hours later, they get out of jail and they're back in the same situation. Their safety is our number one priority. And our officers are trained now to make sure that they have access to the community resources so that we can do our very best. I mean, in conjunction with Avalon, the two agencies partnering together to ensure that we've maximized, if you will, and maybe that's not the best word to use to describe this, but to maximize the outcome being the survivor safety as our top priority.
And I think, you know, as we're talking about that, that phone call is so important, and it's so important on the officer, the survivor, and that's it is an important phone call. And I think this LAP protocol set up really does kind of help prevent future. Wouldn't you say to when we talk about safety of the survivor? Absolutely. I mean, that's our number one concern.
Right. And the amazing thing about LAP is that it's intended to be an intervention that it doesn't just work to, well, screen in or screen out. Okay, well, what does that mean? Well, really, it works to educate women about their risk
right.
and their risk factors and their personal safety, and then allowing them to make decisions about their intimate relationship and about their plans, certainly in the short term, but even longer term. So that they can be more empowered to make the decisions of that are in the best interest of their own self-care. So it's a wonderful program. We're so lucky to have it.
Yes, I agree. And you know, what about COVID? I mean, COVID has had to have. I mean, have you guys seen an increase in calls?
We have. In fact, we ran some numbers, and so last summer. You know, just a short time into COVID, over about an 8-week period over the summer, we noticed that our calls for domestic violence, not necessarily LAP screening necessarily meeting that threshold. Not just intimate partner, but all of our domestics, they were up about 30% from the same period of time a year earlier.
Wow.
Yeah. And then into the fall, and if you just think about this thing, you know, when it first started, I mean, if folks had some financial pressure, I mean, they were just getting into that financial pressure. As the months went on, the anxiety of not knowing what's going on. I mean, maybe you at this point know you don't have your job. Maybe there's been some, you know, substance abuse that maybe was already there, or maybe it's just worsened, or maybe it's new. But now, so into the fall, what we found is about an 8-week period in the fall compared to and I say last year, it's now 21. So I'm talking COVID 20 numbers to pre-COVID 19 numbers over that same 8-week period. Our domestic related calls had increased about 50%. So that's a pretty substantial increase. And again, it doesn't mean that every one of those resulted in an arrest, and certainly not every one of those resulted in a lethality assessment protocol. But what is interesting to note is when you go back and you look at from October of 2019 till March the 9th of 2020, so really from when we started until the beginning of really kind of the just about that March 17th, I think, was really when we started locking down for COVID.
Right.
But we had about 18 lethality assessment situations. So 18, you know, lap encounters, if you will. And then if you fast forward from March the 10th to March the 22nd. So now we are talking a full year comparing to that partial year because we got started in October of 2019. But so now you're talking a full year. So we were looking at 18, not for the full year, but that jumped to 56.
Wow.
Even with the lethality assessment, again, we're talking a larger period of time, but a very substantial jump in those domestic violence situations involving an intimate partner where we felt like at least the screening tool was appropriate to be used. So that's a pretty significant jump, I think.
It really is. And your numbers, unfortunately, match up to Avalon's numbers with the increase of calls to our helpline. I think, you know, I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but they were up about 50%, which is unfortunate. And I'm fearful that we haven't tapped the surface on that. I'm fearful that there is maybe some more down the pipeline.
Yeah, I agree. We're not out of the woods yet. I mean, maybe I feel like we're starting to see light at the end of the tunnel, but I think we have a ways to go yet. So,
and especially when you're talking about children, I know I was talking to the Department of Social Services a while back with a podcast and when Middlesex County, and their fear is that when these, you know, the first line of defense for child abuse is the teachers, they haven't been in school. So, you know, we'll see. And I hope I'm wrong about that. I hope that is a definite wrong, but I know we are prepared and I'm sure you guys are as well.
Yeah, well, we're having the same conversations.
Yeah.
Back to normal, I think, is going to be a new normal, not maybe necessarily exactly back to normal. But
right.
With that, I suspect there are a number of issues that maybe have been somewhat hidden as a result of this situation that are probably going to come to the surface a little bit. So
yeah. I would agree. I would agree. So, you know, when we're talking about LAP protocols, from the perspective of a survivor, what do you feel like the significance of the LAP protocol is?
Well, I think it's important that survivors know they can trust us. You know, they have to, we have to have that trust there. They have to know that when we talk about things like this is going to be confidential, this is going to be very, very, very private. This is voluntary. We're not going to force you to do this. I mean, you know, we've got to start with some trust, some mutual understanding and mutual trust. And so I think that's real important. But I think that this gives us an opportunity to in fact, build on that trust, because it isn't the traditional what happened, when did it happen? I mean, who, what, when, where, and why, you know, it really is. They see us being a part of the process that helps them to find whatever they need other than just dealing with the crisis at hand. And obviously our goal is because we want to prevent another crisis, right? we want to ensure the, you know, we want to maximize the safety for the survivor. But so I do, I think that, so there needs to be some trust up front. But I think as you grow through this process, I think we develop even more trust as I think our victims, our survivors realize, you know, there really is a greater concern for me as a human being than just this officer dealing with this one assault or whatever the situation may be. So
right.
it's a win-win all the way around.
And from a survivor's standpoint, many times what we see is guilt. We'll see a lot of times that, you know, I didn't want to call the police. I didn't want to bother them with this. And you know, also they take the blame of a lot of things they don't need to take the blame for. And it's the mentality. And I think you guys, as well as Avalon, does a good job of saying, this is not your fault. This is circumstantial. And I think that goes a long way in establishing that trust with the survivor.
Right. I mean, absolutely. I mean, there are so many things. I mean, there's so many layers often to these situations that, yeah, it's real important for folks to know that, hey, we're certainly not here to do anything, but to get you the most help that we can get you. And
to protect. We're here to protect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we understand. I mean, we really do. I mean, all officers are very compassionate. And you know, try real hard to have conversations that would, you know, lend itself to the you know, survivor feeling like we're very kind and compassionate and caring about them and their situation.
Yeah, I know. You guys do such a great job of that. And that goes back to how important the relationship is between the officer and the survivor. And we've kind of, you know, gone full circle on this and talked about it, but compassion and I think it's important for us, and I hope you agree with me, that our survivors in that relationship, they do see you as not another threat, that you guys are there to protect them. That's
sure.
Protect and serve. That's what you do. So I think it's important, and I, you know, I'm going to let you touch on that a little.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's, you know, sometimes we're you know, encountering survivors who are really in pretty vulnerable situations. And, you know, unfortunately, because of that, maybe sometimes their experiences with law enforcement hasn't always been super positive, right? And so I really do. I think this is an opportunity for us to really work on those relationships and have the chance to be seen as, look, we're not just here to be just an enforcer. We're not just here to take somebody to jail. I mean, we really are here because we're so concerned about your safety and your situation and helping you to maybe get on the right foot and develop a plan and take the time to kind of work through that plan. So I think it puts the LAP puts us in a different kind of perspective, if you will, with, you know, people again, who maybe haven't always quite seen us that way. And I think there's a lot of good that comes from
it. I agree. I have seen just in my time with working in domestic violence, I've seen huge, I mean, your heart always stops when you see that lap come over, you know, but it's a step in the right direction. And, you know, we could harp on it all day and I could talk all day about our partnership, but it's wonderful. And as you know, when you guys do go on a domestic call, if the officer notices aggression from the abuser or fear, and a survivor, and you guys are trained to know that. Does your office leave it upon the survivor to start the process for an EPO?
Well, okay, so it depends. Obviously, if there's a situation where, you know, probable causes, you know, exist to make the arrest, so then we, you know, we arrest the person, you know, who committed whatever act on. Our survivor, and then that person, you know, goes to jail for domestic violence or whatever the case may be. In those instances, we also go ahead and get the EPO, the emergency protective order, to help ensure that the person doesn't, you know, as we talked earlier, get out of jail and 4 hours later go right back to where the survivor is,
right,
to cause issues for them. So in that case, it's handled pretty seamlessly. And obviously we have them in custody. You know, a couple of things outside of LAP that Virginia Code requires. When there's probable cause to believe that a domestic assault occurred, We are, one, required to make the report, and we are, two, required to make the arrest. And so so we go ahead with that simultaneously, get the protective order, and then of course, you know, they're released to the, in most instances, BPRJ, the regional jail. If there's a situation where there is not probable cause to believe that an assault took place, but maybe it was maybe it wasn't just a brief moment, and now that everyone thinks that they can kind of live happily ever after, and we realize that maybe some other types of things need to be implemented. And if, in that case, if the survivor feels like they, and I often say she, but often, sure, it could be the male or the female, but in those instances where our survivor feels like they're not comfortable and they would like to seek a magistrate to get an emergency protective order, we'll go so far as giving them a ride to the magistrate, walking through the process with them to ensure that they can, you know, navigate, if you will, something that probably they're dealing with it maybe for the first time ever. And then we'll take them back to wherever, you know, they need to go. And then we will go out, you know, seeking the individual that now we need to serve the EPO on.
Okay, that's perfect. So I was going to ask, so you guys can take them to the magistrate?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it happens all the time. Right.
Okay.
Right. And you know, our position is, if they're that concerned, if we're all that concerned that this needs to happen, then we want to do everything we can to help facilitate that occurring. And then we want to quickly as possible, go ahead and serve it so that the individual can't come back and cause additional problems. And if they do come back, obviously, we don't have to wait for them to cause additional problems.
Right.
So we can already do something about it.
And I think from a survivor standpoint, that support, again, that protection, and that I'm here to support you, get you where you need, and because it can be overwhelming. The magistrate process alone can be overwhelming. So having that support there is important.
Absolutely.
All right. So what do you think we can do to enhance our relationship when working with you to help survivors?
Well, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think we've done a lot. I think we're definitely moving in the right direction, but we certainly want to continue to enhance our relationships so that together we can reduce domestic violence incidents. You know, this is important that we not only continue the collaboration on victim issues, but also better understand the roles that each of us have being a supportive network for our survivors. This can be accomplished by training and education of our officers, by Avalon staff. And you guys have done that, where you've actually come in and you've talked to our roll calls and you've briefed all of our officers on whatever it was that we wanted to talk about at that time. But we also realize that, you know, the more we can have the knowledge of the resources and be able to, you know, quickly share that information with the survivors, the lack of you know, or the benefit of that community resource availability to our survivors is pretty incredible. You know, as the saying goes, knowledge is power. I don't think that can be more real in a situation like this. The more knowledge they have about what they can do to help protect themselves or to put themselves in a better situation or to know what resources might be available to them, the more powerful they are in ensuring that they don't find themselves back in the same situation. And again, the educational component may also be helpful for police officers, as those who've been educated about risk assessment and risk assessment tools and victimology and all of those other you know, factors that we've talked about. The more aware our officers are of those types of dynamics, I think the better we can serve the community as a whole.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, Avalon, unfortunately, last year we were having this event, and we're due for another one, but Avalon does an event called In Her Shoes event. And it's very telling. For me, it was very telling, because one of the questions I get asked when I do presentations on the regular is, I don't understand, why doesn't she just leave? And that is such a loaded question. And it's not my favorite question, but I relish the opportunity to be able to answer that question, because the answers are so just they're endless. Essentially, many times you are asking a survivor to leave the comfort of their home and go to a communal shelter.
Right.
That's a tough thing. That's a tough thing for anyone.
Right.
So the you know, we talk about education, and I think it's important that our community understands the different roles and why. And there's so many answers to that question. And this program is a great, and hopefully we'll get to do one, an in-person event soon. I'm really crossing my fingers. I love talking to you over Zoom, but this would have been much more fun in person.
Right. Absolutely.
But I do feel like that it's a good program in educating people two things, on, you know, why they don't leave. So that, you know, survivors can chime in and say, exactly, thank you. But also education of what a healthy relationship is.
Right.
And that true power and control. And many times we'll have survivors come in and they'll say, well, he didn't hit me until last week, or, you know, or he didn't hit me, he punched the wall beside me. So those are things that, you know, once we show them the power and control, we show them the isolation and the financial isolation, and it goes back, you'll see that the abuse actually started long before they considered it abuse.
Right.
So I think, like, to attribute what you said, I think education is a huge component, both on the officers, both on, you know, even friends.
Sure.
That confidant that they have, and that education piece with a friend and talking. And I think, you know, many people ask, well, what can I do? And the first thing is to believe them.
Sure. Absolutely.
They're looking for validation that their concerns are warranted. And I think people tend to brush off the gut, and they need that validation from an officer. They need that validation from their friend, and they certainly need it from Avalon.
Sure. You know, I'm so glad you said that. Early in my career, you know, I started in the early 90s to tell on my age here a little bit, but and the focus wasn't quite the same. But I mean, over the past decade or more, you know, we've trained our officers to start by believing. So regardless of the response, regardless of the situation, just start by believing. And if during the course of the investigation, obviously other factors, you know, take you down a different road in our quest for truth, well, that's, you know, that's one thing, right? But
right.
But typically that's not going to be the case. You start by believing, because trust me, 9 times out of 10, 999 out of 1,000 probably, you know,
right.
it really is true. It really is accurate. And if we don't start by believing, we've missed that early opportunity, not just to build trust, but to ensure that now we can really get to the resolution, to the end point, that the outcome that we really would have liked to have gotten to. So, yeah, absolutely. Our officers are really, we preach that regularly, to start by believing and do your very best, put our best foot forward from the very beginning, and ensure that we're doing everything that we need to be doing so that we can ensure the best outcome. Excellent point.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys do a fantastic job of that. I feel like this has answered all of our lab questions. As I was going, full disclosure, my computer died halfway through, so I had to move over to my phone. But
oh no, okay.
You were super easy to talk to, and I feel like this gives us a better understanding of the lab calls and the lethality assessment protocol, and the importance that we place on the relationship between the survivor and the police department. It's crucial, and I never want a survivor to feel, you know, escalation is a thing. It is a very real thing, and that it also is evidence-based.
Sure.
So I encourage survivors to just, you know, if they're having an immediate issue, of course, reach out to you guys. But if you, you know, Avalon does things like safety planning, and a lot of times our survivors haven't left their abuser, but they are, Avalon is helping them through that process.
Sure.
So I also want, you know, a lot of times people look at Avalon and think it's an emergency, you know, oh, that's an emergency shelter. But we're so much more. And I think that's attributed to our relationship with you guys.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, you certainly are so much more, and you're right. That's a narrow part of what you guys do in a much larger, you know, world that you guys are really operating. So I know I said it when we started, but I say it again, as a community, we are so fortunate to have Avalon, and you guys just do such a wonderful job. And
well, we couldn't do it without you guys and our community. Our community is amazing. I brag about Williamsburg all the time and the surrounding areas. We're just, they rally. They rally, and if they didn't rally, then we couldn't respond, and you guys couldn't respond. So
it's a kind, generous, loving community, and we're very fortunate to be here. So,
well, we're fortunate for you, and we appreciate you and all of your officers. And I know you're a busy man, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk today.
Well, Leslie, I sure enjoyed it. Thank you very much, and again, thank you for all you do and all Avalon does. And we're just so lucky to have you guys as partners, and we appreciate that very much. So. Anything that we could do, please let us know. But thank you very much for taking the time, Juanita, to now do a better job, hopefully, of sharing this story with our community. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Avalon Center's podcast, Responding with Hope, is paid for by the Department of Social Services. Avalon Center offers emergency shelter, individual and group counseling, and much more to survivors of domestic and sexual assault. If you need help, call our 24-hour hotline at 833-537-0970 or visit us at avaloncenter.org.